The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Good morning, Anthony. How are you?
Boker Tov. I was just thinking to myself last night, what would I do if I had 44 billion hanging around somewhere, wondering what I might be able to do some, you know, I don't know if you guys have had to think about it. If you've got 44 billion hanging around in cash, nothing much to do with it, what do you do with it, right? We know what Elon wants to do with his.
Yeah.
But on a completely unrelated topic, I was very devastated to see that Elite chocolates are being recalled in Israel to a salmonella outbreak at the Strauss factory, the Elite factory, which of course belongs to Strauss, the Elite line of chocolates. And this includes all my favorites, Eggos and Pesek Zman and the cow chocolate and all of those, all being recalled. Yeah, on a more serious note, though, obviously this is a serious issue. Fortunately, there haven't been any reports of anybody actually suffering from salmonella poisoning. The salmonella outbreak in the factory was apparently detected during some routine checks that were done. Lots of accusations about when exactly the salmonella was discovered. Maybe it was as early as last week without anything having been said or done about it. The recall was issued yesterday. I hope that it's not going to be a chocolateless Yom Ha'atzmaut next week. You know, everybody's thinking about the upcoming holidays and what the impact might be with our chocolates on the shelves. But anyway, everybody's having to take their chocolates back. They will get vouchers. Already class actions have been launched, even though nobody's been ill, nobody's suffered. There have been no damages as far as we understand. I don't know what this class action is about. Maybe the inconvenience of having to take your chocolate back and get a voucher for it.
It's a trauma. It's the trauma, Anthony, of thinking that, just like you said, of being chocolateless. I mean, that's what it is.
Well, maybe I need to join the class action then.
Anthony, in all seriousness, I mean, does this affect any of the exports?
So it probably will affect some of the exported chocolates. I'm not exactly sure how they're going to deal with the exported chocolates. There are specific lists that have been issued for the chocolates that are being recalled by the sell-by date. It's all been issued. If people have bought Elite chocolates recently from, let's say, February, March time, then I would advise you to have a look and see whether the chocolates that you have are subject to the recall. Even some Pesach Dikka versions were included in the list, some of the puddings that Elite produce. So if you do have Elite chocolates, I do suggest that you look it up just to make sure that the ones that you've got are not part of the recall.
Absolutely crazy. Let's get to some other news stories. Israel has decided to reopen the Gaza border crossings after closing them following an outbreak of violence in Jerusalem and rocket fire from the Gaza Strip. So why has this decision to reopen the borders come so soon?
Yeah, so there's lots of questions about, you know, is this the right thing to be doing right now? What is the purpose of closing the border if we're actually going to open it up so quickly? Is this really about risk and reward? Is this about a carrot or is it about a stick? What exactly is the purpose of closing the border? Now, as we know things right now, Israel has issued work permits to something like 12,000 Gazans who are able to cross backwards and forwards each day from the Gaza Strip to work in Israel, and something like 100,000 residents of the Palestinian Authority area have the same right, an official permit to come across the crossing each day to work in Israel and to return home again. And that was considered to be kind of some sort of a reward for good behavior, for peaceful activity, for lack of attacks, particularly from Gaza. But I think that there's more to it than just the reward. And therefore, when there is bad behavior, as we've seen over the past few weeks with the outbreak of violence in Jerusalem, much of it, we believe, driven by Hamas in the background, and of course, some sporadic rocket fire that we've experienced, and even some attempts to fire rockets, which didn't really come off. But nonetheless, the It was the intention, it was the thought that went into it rather than the effect of whether the rocket actually reached Israel and caused any damage or injury or not. So there was certainly some bad behavior in Hamas, and it seems has been behind at least some of this orchestrated events that we've seen on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem over the past few weeks. And so immediately the Gaza border was closed as a kind of a punishment. But the question is, who are we punishing, and how does this punishment actually play out? In the first instance, let's think about people who employ these Gazans, whether they be farmers, agricultural units, kibbutzim, or potentially construction companies that might use them, the Gazan citizens, for manual labor on construction sites. So they would be paying a price for the Gaza border being closed, because one fine morning they would turn up to work and there wouldn't be any of the workers who usually come from Gaza wouldn't be there. And so obviously it impacts on the ability of those particular industries, those particular employers, to be able to function, because all of a sudden they don't have the employees. So let's think about them. Let's also think about the impact of not having the economic flow, the money that flows into Gaza that improves the general lives of the Gazans. Hopefully a bit of goodwill being passed with the Gazans, seeing how we operate in Israel, how we're willing to help to make the lives of themselves and their families a lot better, and hopefully distract their attention away from terror activities, which is what people think about when they have nothing to keep occupied and nothing to sustain them from an economic point of view. So I don't know whether closing the Gaza border is really a punishment to them, to Hamas, to the people of Gaza, to the employers in Israel, to who exactly we're punishing here. And it's interesting that they've decided very, very quickly indeed to reopen the border today. So there will be that flow backwards and forwards. And I think, in effect, the Gaza border was really closed for a very short period of time. But I'm interested to hear as well what the listeners have to say about all of these concepts, because I'm a little confused at the moment as to exactly who we punish every time the border goes closed.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you want to weigh in on this discussion, you're welcome to. 34519 is the text line, or 061-895-1019 on Telegram. Anthony, a member of Knesset for the Member Party, was officially declared a defector yesterday. Now, I thought, this is very strange, because a defector is, by definition, is a person who has abandoned their country or cause in favor of an opposing one. This happens all the time in politics. In fact, here in South Africa, we even have, you know, a floor crossing season in Parliament, where you can get up and join another party. I mean, it's an official thing. So why is it such a big deal?
So in Israel, the impact of being officially declared a defector has certain implications. First of all, there is a certain legal implication that particular individual actually cannot stand in the next Knesset at all for any party. So by being declared a defector, they are effectively reducing the ability, or taking away completely the ability, of that individual to actually serve at all as a member of the next Knesset. Interestingly enough, in the case that we've experienced yesterday, in the case of a member of Knesset, Amichai Shikli, who was elected on the Yamina list belonging to Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, the Likud party, who have welcomed him with open arms, because obviously he represents another very, very critical vote to the opposition, but also potentially weakens the Yamina party and the governing coalition. They've welcomed him with open arms, have pointed out that even though he is prevented from running for the next Knesset as a member of Knesset, he could still be appointed as a minister in the next government, assuming, of course, that the Likud has the right to form the next government. So there are certain loopholes that are in play here. But I think we need to look at what's happened here. First of all, Amichai Shikli was, as I said, elected on the Yamina list. He moved away from the Yamina party very, very quickly indeed. Yamina originally had put together this coalition, Naftali Bennett together with Yair Lapid, which had 62 members of Knesset in the entire coalition, made up of a number of different parties. very, very quickly indeed, Amichai Shikli expressed his dissatisfaction at the way in which the coalition had been put together. He feels not that he has defected from Yamina, but he feels that Yamina has defected from their electorate by actually entering into this particular coalition government, putting it together. He feels that they've gone so far from the election platform that they promised to those people who voted for them that he can't be seen to be involved any longer with Yamina and particularly with the governing coalition. He did that already quite some time ago, and he's been voting together with the Likud already quite a number of times. In fact, there are a few hundred occasions where his record, his voting record, was actually set out yesterday. He had apparently voted against the coalition 754 times since this coalition was put together. So he's already a serial defector. He's already been involved for some time. But yeah, obviously, Naftali Bennett wanted to make something of an example of him, because we also, of course, have the other issue of other people from Yamina seemingly wanting to move out of Yamina party. We saw that recently with member of Knesset Silman. She decided as well that she didn't want to be part of Yamina any longer. So obviously Naftali Bennett yesterday decided to go officially to the Knesset committee and to declare Shikli a defector. He was voted as a defector. There were lots of shenanigans in the committee meeting. People were being thrown out left, right, and center for misbehavior. It was really a bit of a circus. In the end, though, Naftali Bennett got what he wanted, to make a bit of an example of this particular member of Knesset and to try and send a message to others that if they are going to move out of his party and across the floor and weaken the governing coalition, there will be implications, there will be consequences. You won't just allow it to happen freely without any consequences.
Okay, but hold on a second. Anthony, if your party that you are a part of and you represent the values, I mean, you join political parties because they align with your values or you align with theirs. If they no longer represent what you value, you do need to go. That's called integrity. And that's why I don't understand. I understand that the implications are massive, but what he did was not wrong, surely.
Well, I think there are a few ways of dealing with that situation. Way number one says, I was elected as a member of Knesset, as a representative of this party. So I'm not elected in my own right. Nobody voted for him as such. They voted for the party, and he happens to be a representative of the party. If he feels that he no longer represents the party, or the party no longer represents him, he can resign and let somebody else take his place who does represent the party and who the party represents. He's not forced to take to cross the floor and to go to another party, because let's remember again that he personally wasn't elected. He was put into Knesset as a member of a party.
So
the crossing of the floor is a significant issue. It's not a minor issue. And therefore, while I understand your point about him retaining his integrity, I think there are other ways of dealing with this. And of course, as I said before, this was an example being made of him for Naftali Bennett to somehow try to regain some of the control. But I would say one thing in terms of, you know, do we want to compromise in order to get into government, or do we rather want to hang on to every little part of our election platform and be in the opposition? And, you know, the experience in Israel shows very clearly that if you're in the opposition, you have so little influence over what goes on that there might be a good case for simply swallowing your pride to some degree. I'm not saying that you need to give up on every fundamental thing that you believe and go across to a completely different way of thinking, but potentially swallowing your pride a little bit, being prepared to compromise to some degree, but being in government in order to control the agenda of the day. And I think that that's where Naftali Bennett comes from. And of course, because he's formed this very broad coalition, there inevitably have to be certain compromises that are made.
Anthony Reich, that is where we leave it. Thank you so much. And thank you for that explanation. I now have a better understanding. And we will chat to you tomorrow, or rather you'll speak to Howard Feldman.